In this episode of the On.net show, we have Chris Anderson joining us, and he's going to talk to us about authenticating our apps with Cosmos DB. Welcome to another episode of the On.net show. My name is Cecil Phillip, and with me today I have Chris Anderson. What's going on, Chris?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing pretty good, man. So you've come with some interesting demos to show us today, right?
Yeah, a couple of things.
So you have this demo you wanted to talk about doing resource tokens authentication. Like what is that? What is that about?
Yeah, so if you want to use Cosmos DB today, Most people end up using Cosmos DB from a well-known trusted server and using their master key to actually talk to their server. But one of the other options that's available is using resource tokens.
Okay.
The challenge is that in order to actually create a resource token, you need to use the master key. So you end up needing to create a service which is well-known and trusted to create resource tokens, which then issues that to less trusted services based off of what they should be able to access.
Gotcha.
So normally you'd go ahead and set yourself up like a web app that would do that, but I thought, Cosmos is really infinitely scalable. Why not use something which also scales with it and use functions? So I went ahead and took a couple of samples that we have for doing token issuing and wrote a function sample with it.
Gotcha. So let's take a look at it and see what you got.
Yeah. So it's here on GitHub. I'm going to go ahead and explore it inside of Visual Studio, but if you want to, you can go ahead and find it there on this GitHub here. I have Visual Studio open right now, and in it, the meat and potatoes of what's going on here is I've got this function, which is going through there and looking for a couple of header properties, which indicate that EasyAuth has done its job and authenticated this user who's trying to access this endpoint.
Gotcha.
So we only want to allow authenticated users to get a token. You don't want to be handing out tokens to the entire world, technically.
Right. So pretty much what's happening is that my function user is authenticated, right? And I'm wanting to use that same user context to talk to my Cosmos DB.
In certain ways, you're trying to translate that user context into a Cosmos DB aware
user
context. Cosmos isn't aware of like AD or like Facebook or whatever you'd be using to authenticate to the service. And so what we have to do is we have to translate kind of application authentication features into the service's knowledge of things.
So
you might want your application user to be able to access any information about themselves.
Okay.
In Cosmos, that would translate to a given collection and a given partition key within that collection. And so you'd issue a resource token for only that partition key.
Gotcha. Okay. Cool.
Here we grab the user's information. You can see we're parsing the token. We know that this is going to be a JSON web token, so we can go ahead and just use the built-in JWT security token library that is there in .NET. And then, if there's an error, we can go ahead and throw a nice helpful error here of unauthorized. And importantly here, we're logging an error and info warning.
Yeah.
And if I have App Insights turned on, this will then show up in App Insights. So when the user or third-party service emails me saying, hey, we can't access our Cosmos, they can give me my invocation ID that I've set here, and I can go look that up in App Insights to go figure out why did they not why we're not able to get into the service.
Yeah, you can see some telemetry about what exactly happened, the time, the date, and some of those type of things.
We might not want to leak information about why that happened to the public internet. So we give a relatively unhelpful, you weren't able to authorize error message.
Right.
But we make sure we don't want to lose the reason, so when we have to debug later, it's easy to look up.
Got it.
So that's a really nifty thing here of having Azure Functions and App Insights baked in together.
Gotcha.
And then here I'm going through there, and in this case I'm reading the permissions that people are allowed to access as just app settings. So this way it's kind of a static set of permissions. I could back this with a Cosmos DB table, so I could have a table of permissions that a given user was allowed to access instead.
Right.
And so if you wanted to, you could take this sample and change this logic here where I'm basically translating, basically it's like a connection string type of format almost. I'll show you an example here in a second. And then that actually gets turned into a permission object that I've got here. So I'm adding a permission to my permissions token, and I'm fetching it with this resource token provider class. And I just did this as a separate class. This class here is actually just a .NET full framework app because I'm using functions v1 still.
Okay.
But I wanted to make sure that I could actually use the .NET standard libraries for Cosmos. And so I implemented the Cosmos-specific pieces in a .NET standard library and then referenced that from the .NET framework.
Nice. So you're using like .NET standard 2.0 to leverage.
And so when functions v2 GAs, I can write a separate functions v2 sample that uses all the latest things and functions v2. But obviously, there's some breaking changes between v1 and v2. So I wrote the sample so that way I could have both versions around.
Great. So you could still pull in your DP resource token provider.
Mm-hmm.
And you, all you need to do now is just you'll change your function app, make whatever updates you need to make. But then that code, like that business code, so to speak, is still like still relevant, still valid. You can still use it wherever.
And the only real tricks, the advice that I could give folks would be make sure that you if you're passing objects back and forth between those two libraries, go and create your own custom objects. Right. Don't pass JSON.NET objects back and forth. Because that's a really easy way to fall into the old kind of dependency issues gap where you're using different versions of your JSON.NET on either platform because they support different types.
Yeah.
And you have odd translation errors there. So you can always get around that with redirects and stuff like that. But I find it oftentimes easier to just create my own custom POCO.
Right, I gotcha. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, so you're using some types here, permission token, and there's also app permission. So where did those come from? Are those classes you wrote, or are they part of the SDK?
Yeah, so permission token is, both of these things are types that I created. So basically, I created the app permission is something inside of the functions project as something to hand off to the .NET standard library. Mm-hmm. And then the permission token is actually coming from the opposite direction. So that's coming from the .NET standard library.
So
these are types that I created, so it was just easier for me to go and work with my data.
Got it.
You know, this has the JSON.NET annotations on it, so that way it goes ahead and gives me the object that I expect to when I return it from functions, and that works just fine.
Got it.
I'm going through here. I'm basically just creating a list of those permissions and then returning the list. And Azure Functions will automatically go ahead and transform that list into an array of JSON objects for me.
And so inside of that, then that would have like one of like you can get your token from there.
Yeah, right? And so the actual token logic itself, if we want to dive into that, the core of it is essentially going through there, and I look to see whether or not it exists in a cache. I keep an in-memory cache, so that way you don't have to go ahead and ask Cosmos each time.
Sure.
If I've already looked up it, and the tokens are valid for an hour, and so if I've already looked up this token on this function app before.
Yeah.
In memory. So I could have thousands of instances of my function app. So maybe I've got thousands of it in memory still.
Sure.
This simplifies not having to use like a Redis cache. So an in-memory cache is actually pretty effective still for a lot of these cases.
Great.
If it's not in there, I actually go through there and I try to create it. And if it fails, then it might actually already exist because of a race condition. And so at that point, I go ahead and try to query it existing through the permission feed. And so this is just some of the quirks of the resource token APIs.
Yeah.
You can only create a single resource token for a given resource. Mm-hmm. And so if you want two different users to get access to the same resource with the same level of permissions, they have to get the same resource token. And so you have to do some kind of hops right now. This isn't ideal. We're working on some other things inside of the Cosmos DB team to try to improve the experience of how you do authentication for things. But this is the reason I wanted to create myself my own custom class for this, is because this allows me to go ahead and kind of compartmentalize some of the more complex business logic away from my application that doesn't need to care about how I get the token, it just wants a token.
Got it. So I'm guessing on your side then, if two users for the same resource are using the same token, you'd have to manually do some mapping on your side to say, hey, this user is allowed to see this resource, and then once you get the token back, hey, I'm going to let you use this token to access Cosmos.
And so effectively what I'm doing is inside, I can show you an example of what the actual connection string looks like that I'm using in this model. You can see here, I'm just, for my local debug settings, I'm just using these local things. So if you copy and paste this key, you're not going to get yourself very far, people.
Got it.
in this case, I've got a connection string that's essentially just the resource path in my Cosmos DB. So you can see DBs, test 2, calls, test 3.
Yeah.
And then I have my permission settings there for all. I can also, in this sample, and this is docked in the README if anyone wants to follow along later, I can also specify a property that's going to be on my JSON web token that I want to use as the partition key. So this allows me to do user-specific filtering for resource tokens.
Got it.
Okay. So I can go ahead and I can set this to UPN, which is a property on the JSON web token that refers to their email address.
Right.
You have to go and look up what properties are on the JSON web token in your particular case to know which ones you can use. But once I've done this, I can now use that key from my JSON web token to filter out which things people are allowed to access.
Got it.
So in the case that I was just doing, everyone can access everything on this collection. Hmm. There's a bunch of people would be sharing the same resource token.
Yeah.
But in the case that I was doing user-specific partition key tokens, each user would be getting their own unique resource token for their partition key.
For their partitions. Got it.
And so, yeah, it's complex. If you're really interested in how the authentication pieces for Cosmos works, I definitely recommend just following through the code, because it can be really interesting to see how that stuff works. But for the most part, my goal was to build something that you didn't have to think about. You give it a connection string, and it returns a token of equivalent permissions to that connection string.
Nice. And then what we could do too is we could take, so you have this on GitHub, right? So we could always like add the links to the bottom of the show notes and people could check it out and see what exactly you want to.
And as we add additional ways of authenticating to Cosmos, I plan on trying to expand that sample with those other ways. And I'm even thinking about trying to add like storage inside of this. So you could use the same mechanism to get access to a storage SAS token. We have other samples for functions to get a SAS token for like a new blob.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be really interesting to introduce some of the same concepts for storage as well. So this sample will keep on getting worked on over some, you know, couple of weeks.
Got it. And so just before we move on, so tell us again, like, why is it a good idea, or you know, why do we have this option of using resource tokens versus just using like, you know, the typical master key that gets generated for us when we create a new Cosmos DB collection?
Yeah, I mean, it's oftentimes because you're being told to. but it's really because you want to always try to follow the principles of least privileged access.
Great.
If I'm just using an insurance company as an example, let's say that I'm an insurance company that I need to share some of this data with third parties, other businesses, so B2B type scenarios. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just want to give them access to my Cosmos DB, but I want them to only be able to read certain collections. I don't want them to be able to write data, obviously, and I don't want them to read everything. I don't want them to read certain types of data.
Yeah.
I can now issue a resource token that gives them very specific access, and I can go ahead and revoke that access within the expiration timeout of the resource token. So if I wanted to stop doing business with them, I don't have to rotate all of my master keys.
Right.
I only have to just prevent them from being able to log into my application further.
Sorry, so I have more granular access per partitions and my different collections when I use this particular way of authenticating users.
And it's scoped and timed, so you don't have a token that can last for forever. So you don't need to worry about rotating it. It's automatically rotated.
Nice, cool.
So you know what you end up getting when you actually run this thing, you can see you can run this locally by just setting all these properties. They won't be validated unless you're using EasyAuth, so just be careful that you make sure that you turn on EasyAuth when you end up running this thing on Azure.
Got it.
EasyAuth will go through there and strip these things if you try to send these things to when you're running on Azure. So you don't have to worry about people trying to spoof these requests.
You with some of these type of tokens.
Yeah, but this is what ends up getting returned. I now have this token that can get access to my Cosmos DB for an hour. I have this expires timeout here that I can use. You can see that I actually have the resource ID that I'm allowed to access. And so I can easily now consume this from the Cosmos DB SDKs. If you want to learn more about how to actually consume those from the Cosmos DB SDKs, we're not going to go into that sample here, but there's this great article here on the Cosmos DB documentation about securing access to data and using resource tokens, and it describes some of these kind of patterns of using things. And so with this code sample, you can now do this in a serverless fashion without having to stand up a dedicated server to issue these tokens.
Nice. That's great. That's awesome. So Chris, why don't we talk a little bit about how can I deploy this, right? So, you know, I have this thing that's going to issue tokens for me. You know, I have my function set up. My Cosmos DB is provisioned. And you're running this locally now, right? Like, I want to push this into Azure. Like, how do I, you know, how can I securely push this up there?
So I always advocate for people who are building Azure applications to make sure that they're always having their ARM template as part of their solution in the case that they're doing, you know, .NET projects.
Right.
If you're doing something that's not .NET, you can always just have the ARM template as, you know, some subdirectory inside of your project. But I really love Visual Studio's ARM project support. So I'm going to show how that works here. This is an example ARM template that's going to go ahead and deploy myself. You can see here the actual resources on the side here, which is one of the reasons this is such a great experience. I've actually got a storage account. I have my app service hosting plan, which is the dynamic hosting plan that hosts my function apps inside of it.
Yeah.
Mostly an implementation detail for most people, and then the actual function app itself. And then something that I always advocate for, App Insights. Make sure that you always have App Insights for your function apps. It just makes debugging so much simpler to monitor and manage. And you can do that as part of deployment, so you don't need to worry about setting it up afterwards.
Nice, got it.
Inside of the web app itself, or the function app itself, I have all of my settings. You can see here I'm setting my web jobs dashboard, my web jobs storage, my local files connection string for getting Azure files working. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd be changing this to -2 if I was using the
V2
beta version
V2.
In the case of V1, we can go ahead and set that to 1. If I was using Node, that setting would matter, but it doesn't matter so much for .NET.
And so pretty much what we're looking at here, these are environment variables, right, that I could go in and I could change. And these would be inside of my app settings
exactly.
Once my function is deployed.
And the interesting one here that I wanted to talk about, because we're going to do something different that I've really never demoed before for functions because it's fairly new.
Okay.
And that's the ability to run from zip.
Oh, well, so hold on one second. So today, I could right-click publish mm-hmm. in Visual Studio. I could use VSTS. Right, and then it can also use like GitHub or you know some other source control deployment type options. Mm-hmm. So why would I want to run from zip? Like, tell me exactly what are the scenarios that I'd want to do this versus some of the others.
So all of those other mechanisms to deploy that you mentioned mm-hmm. actually end up putting stuff inside of Azure Files.
Yes.
The problem is that means pulling all those things from Azure Files every single time that you run, and that can be a little bit slow.
Okay.
And so one of the things that Azure Functions has come out with in order to help alleviate this is the ability to go ahead and have a compressed zip package. So it's a lot easier to download your contents locally mm-hmm. and run from them without having to download them all from Azure Files each time that we come up with a new instance.
Okay.
And so with run from zip, I'm able to just have cold start reduced by a pretty dramatic amount, especially if you're doing Node.js with lots of node modules.
Yeah.
But it still helps for .NET where things are a bit more, sane.
Gotcha. So regardless of whether it's Node.js or C# or whatever other platform that Azure Functions supports, all I have to do is pretty much package up my Azure Functions application, mm-hmm. package it up in a zip file. I'm guessing I'll upload it somewhere, and then it'll just pull it down and just run it for me?
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things is that since it's just asking for a endpoint to download that zip from, mm-hmm. it's really flexible about where you put that zip.
Okay.
In the case of you could structure your application in such a way that it was just hosted on GitHub and you used GitHub's download zip feature and just posted that as the URL.
Yeah.
You can put it inside of blob storage, which is what I've got an example here of.
Okay.
And one really cool thing is that you can actually put that URL behind a redirect link. So if you have a redirect like a proxy, you can actually go ahead and put your zip link behind that proxy and then update that zip link without ever updating the proxy. And so now you can go ahead and do deployments without actually pushing them everywhere. This is really helpful for this part. I actually use this in this sample because what we have is when you publish the sample, I didn't want you to necessarily have to run through the steps of building that code. I wanted to have it already kind of packaged so it was a lot faster to deploy.
Gotcha.
And this is a lot faster because it's already compiled for me. And so now when you actually deploy this sample and deploy the ARM template, it actually just runs from a zip that I have hosted on one of Microsoft's blob storage accounts.
So this sounds way faster than doing like a source control push, right? Because again, if I think about publishing versus Git, right? So it's going to look at my repo. It's going to, let's say it's Node or .NET or whatever. It's going to have to restore all my packages, run my build, package it up, and then it has to go put it onto the disk server.
Yeah.
With this one, it's already built. It's already packaged. It's really just saying, hey, just go grab this artifact and run it.
Yeah. And then the nice thing there is that it's really easy to then roll back. If you were to push, version 3 out and it had an issue, you could then go ahead and roll back yourself to V2 without having to actually rebuild V2.
Right.
As long as you have V2 sitting out there as a blob still, you just change the setting and point back to that V2 blob.
Hmm. Okay, cool.
And so there's you can do some of these same things with things like VSTS. VSTS has support for basically having your artifacts already stored inside of VSTS, and then you just web deploy those, previous versions of artifacts back.
Sure.
This is the main advantage of this is that this actually runs it as a zip on the local file system. And so it can still be faster than doing web deploy to the Azure file stuff. That's the biggest advantage. But because now we're able to use this publicly addressable zip, we can do a lot of those cool things that VSTS also enables you to do in terms of version control and stuff. The nice thing is VSTS can still publish your contents to a blob. And so you can still have some of the exact same patterns as you do in VSTS. This doesn't stop those from happening.
Cool, that's cool. Let's take a look and see how this works.
Yeah, so in the interest of making sure that it's actually like a live demo, I actually only created the resource group, but there's actually nothing there to kind of prove that there's nothing up my sleeves, so to speak. Here's my resource group, and it's empty right now.
Got it.
So the nice thing with this is it's really easy for me to go ahead and just hit deploy. Click on my resource group that I'd already set up and created. I've already got my parameters set up here that actually have secrets and stuff in it. So having those separated from your actual template is generally a good idea.
Okay.
The only reason I didn't have that storage string as actually a parameter is that I didn't want to have to show all of my secrets
inside
the demo.
Of course.
So normally I'd have
Keep that as
a variable.
Got it.
So that's going to go ahead and run. We see here that this is going to show up in this output here at the bottom. So this is going to go ahead and keep on deploying.
Yep.
If we go back and we look at our resource group, we should start to see services show up in here. So this has already created the app insights, it's already created the app service plan, mm-hmm. and now it's creating the storage account, and then it will create the function app.
And it's going to create the function app. So pretty yeah. much, again, like all these things where you had defined inside of your ARM template, and now by just publishing that ARM template, you know, Azure's going to look at the template, look at your parameters, your variables, all that type of stuff. It's going to start creating all of these resources inside of this resource group.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's really repeatable. And I'm sure that, mm-hmm. you know, everyone listening has already had it drummed into them that they should use ARM templates to do their deployments.
Yeah.
But really, it's just, it saves you so much time, even when I'm just trying to do a demo. So you can see here that everything's been created now.
Yeah, your function app is there, the resource group, everything's right there.
And, you know, if everything went well, when I click on this function app, I should actually be able to see that my function now contains my Cosmos token provider.
Nice.
And what I never actually right-click and published the function app. You notice that I didn't go through that step of actually going through here and publishing this.
Yes.
This is running off of a the URL that I already had there, and I already had a copy of this demo published here, and you can see token providers zip 002 was already there.
Got
and
it.
So this is running that version. You can verify that by going to that function, and I actually, one tip, just pro tip from me, mm-hmm. is if you go in your host.json, you can actually store variables that belong only to your application. So they don't have to always be variables that Function App knows about.
Okay.
And so what I like to do is I like to store my app version in my host.json so I can always tell which version of my application I'm running.
Okay.
So just, you know, little tip from me as one of the places you can store information like that.
Sure. I mean, and is this accessible from my Functions app, or is this just purely like a deployment artifact?
So so this is your host.json. So you can always access your host.json. It's just there at the base of your project structure. You can also make it like a static variable in the case of .NET. So if you wanted to have it as something that you could programmatically access, I might actually just make it like a static read-only property that everything can access.
Sure.
But if I want to just at a glance be able to see things, host.json is a very easy way of putting it.
Great. Cool. Got it.
And so, yeah, now everything's set up here. Of course, I've got all of my stuff like App Insights turned on. But the one interesting thing is that if I try to make a request to this to my function, which you can't, I don't have the content because it's a precompiled one, it won't work because I haven't turned on EasyAuth.
So you've mentioned EasyAuth a few times before. Mm-hmm. And I've been meaning to ask you, like, what exactly is that? Like, what do we do with EasyAuth?
So EasyAuth is an unofficial name for the authentication and authorization service. I find that to be a mouthful, so I call it by the internal name, which I probably shouldn't. EasyAuth, right?
EasyAuth.
Chris Skillman's going to come find me. so I can go ahead and I call it EasyAuth, and that was the code name, I guess, for it, because it's just so easy to turn on authentication. So
it's EasyAuth, right?
I can go ahead and put AED in front of this function app by just clicking on turning on EasyAuth. You see I have a lot of providers that I can set up. I'm going to go ahead and just use the express mode where this will create a kind of default AED application for me.
Mm-hmm.
Hit OK. This will go off and create that. And then I can go ahead and hit save. And then once this kind of spinning line finishes, I'll actually have AED in front of my application. So you can see here that took all of like 5 seconds. And I can do this in an ARM template too. It's just in this case, since this sample, I want you to be able to choose which authentication provider you're using.
Sure.
I have you do it as a second step. You can go ahead and have your app key and authorization token as part of your ARM template as well.
Got it.
So now if I go ahead and try to access this function by grabbing the URL, and it's going to restart when I change when I change authentication. So there's just going to be a little bit of spinning this up again. Grab this URL right here, and it will go ahead and just do a redirect bounce for me because I'm already logged in. So I'm just going to go ahead and open up an incognito window. And you can see it gives me a could not authenticate user. It didn't set that up. So just waiting for EasyAuth to actually work. And it's the reason you know it's a live demo because EasyAuth.
Is it still turning on?
So one step you have to do with EasyAuth, and honest mistake. You can turn on EasyAuth without actually forcing people to always use EasyAuth. Mm-hmm. This is really helpful if you want to have a index page that isn't authenticated, that then you click on a login button, and then now everything's authenticated from there.
Mm-hmm.
To make things simple, you can also force everyone to log in before they ever access your content.
Got it.
And so when I go ahead and if I change this from anonymous to login with Active Directory as the forced action when they're not authenticated,
So this by default is going to say anytime you hit this URL, mm-hmm. right, you need to authenticate with Active Directory before.
And you can see that this was secure if I didn't set up EasyAuth. It started yelling at me because I wasn't authenticated.
Yeah.
But now that I've set up EasyAuth and I've now force users when they try to access my URL to authenticate, Now this should go ahead and bounce me out to AD to log in.
Right.
As you can see here, this is going to take me to log in, to ask me to log in. I'm just going to go ahead and instead open that up where I've already logged in, so you don't have to watch me type out my password.
Sure.
So just hit enter there.
So because you're authenticated in this context, when it's not asking you for your username and password,
exactly.
Email address, whatever.
Single sign-on just continues to work.
Yeah.
And then now I can go ahead and, like, it's a new application that I've never visited before, so it's going to, of course, ask me to accept like any AD application would.
Sure.
And now, the next time I visit, this won't ask me that. It only asks me the first time I log into the application. And then you can see here, now I have this empty array of permissions. It returned XML because we're obeying the content type. So if I change the content type to application JSON as part of my request, I'd get JSON back.
JSON instead. Got it.
Chrome by default asks for application XML. So we get XML back. And it's empty because I didn't set up any permissions for my Cosmos on Azure. So if I set up permissions, that fancy connection string, you'd see an array of connections here.
Got it. So we've seen a couple of things, right? So you've shown us how to use resource tokens with Cosmos DB, and then now you're showing us how we could have those resource tokens generated using an Azure function that's in itself kind of being protected by EasyAuth.
Yes.
Right. Cool.
And now, you know, it's really simple for you to go ahead and start using these tokens from within your application. So if you wanted to give users just a little bit of access to your data, you can now do it with EasyAuth and the token provider model.
Cool. Well, hey, thanks for coming on, man.
Like,
so if people want to learn a little bit more about what you talked about here, is there a repo that we could go to check some of this stuff out?
Yeah, so the token provider is the place to go ahead and learn about the resource token model and to see an example of the run from Zip working.
Okay.
And then one other thing that I recommend people go ahead and do is look under Azure App Service announcements for the run from Zip announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And this is information about, you know, the early stages of this preview. So like they're working on getting you know, more portal UI, they're working on getting this into the CLI, but for now you can use this by just setting the app setting. And like I said, it's really, really handy if you are looking to reduce cold start from file loading.
And it's available today in functions V1 apps and also V2 apps? Or just
in V2. It does not work on Linux yet.
Does not work on Linux
yet. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, cool.
And it also works for app service web apps, too. So while we built this for functions specifically, this is something that works for all of the things inside of app service that are the non-Linux version.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. Thanks, Chris, man.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
And there we go. There's another episode of the On.NET Show.